Commentary 1X01 Pilot Processing Data Packet Retrieved. To sync data, begin episode on my mark. 3, 2, 1. Mark.
Greetings, Terminator fans. I am the Godfather SJP, the production manager and head writer of Terminator the Connor Chronicles. I also provide the voice of Sykes.
And I'm Roxy Biscaint, General Sarah Connor Chronicles hanger-on of fandom. I also do the voice of Teresa Dyson for the Connor Chronicles and do marketing.
And I'm Mr. Domino. I'm the voice director for the show and the sound editor, and I also do the voice of John Connor.
Well, now we have the opening shootout scene of this pilot episode, which, actually, I'm not a very big fan of this episode of the show. I think it's actually one of the weakest ones. And I particularly don't like this shootout scene because I think it is a less well-done cops and cops cars get shot scene that we've seen done, and at this point, the first three movies. And I really think they actually could have done without most of this. I think a lot of it's unnecessary.
Yeah, a lot of it just plays on, you know, what the suits and what the execs felt that audiences were going to expect from a Terminator show. You know, they put that name out there, and
I'm not sure I would even go that far. I think
really think that more than anything else, the fact that this was on network and the fact that it had the name Terminator in the title is ultimately what doomed it, because it brought a certain level of expectation that it couldn't live up to. I think it's a fantastic show, but for somebody that was not really looking for a serialized drama, somebody that was looking for basically a week-to-week Terminator movie, they weren't ever going to get that.
I think it's more along the lines of this is one of the problems when you have fans of a franchise continuing the show. By the way, I do think this is brilliant how Sarah gets out of the handcuffs here with this cop, because she is such a badass. This, by the way, is one of our big disagreements between myself and Roxy. I think the pilot is a good episode of TV. I don't think it's great, and she loves it. She thinks it's incredible.
Wait, I never said that. This episode sucks. The show sucks. No, I'm just kidding. I love it. I love it. I totally love the pilot. You're right. I think you're wrong completely. I think I've told you this before, that I came into the show with very low expectations, because I remember reading about it and thinking, really, for a TV show, they're going to do Terminator? And I thought it was going to suck completely. So, and then when I saw the pilot, I was completely blown away. And I don't mean like in a T2 sort of way, like, oh my God, like greatest action movie ever. I just thought that it was like a much deeper show than, like, I think I was looking more for a fluff. That's what I was expecting. And we got something way more than that. And to me, the action was really just kind of icing on it. It was like, oh, cool, I can't believe there's all this action in a TV show. So for me, it was great.
Well, see, here I think, like, with the shootout, you could have just done this. You know, Sarah tries to distract the Terminator and just ignores her and shoots John dead. I mean, it's really all you need from this. And then the nightmaric imagery. But one of the things I think of, the reason this is like we have all this money for this pilot because we're on a broadcast TV show, which is a whole other subject we're going to get to. Whereas if they were on cable, obviously they'd have to cut more corners, and you know, I think if it had, the show had been on cable, then this big shootout would not have been in the beginning.
Well, they could have done it in a way other than the big cop shootout, but I think maybe they were probably looking for a way to kind of bridge from the action of the movies into a smaller story in a way, you know, where it focused more on the characters. And how do you do that when you have audiences coming to a show called Terminator? If you open with an action sequence, more or less, it's going to maybe draw those people in. You know, if you open on some drama between Sarah and John, that people might have turned it off right away. People that were looking for an action show, you know, or thinking about the movies in terms of
yeah, but they don't.
So they come and you start with action. It turns out to be the dream that kind of drives Sarah through the whole series. So I think I thought it was a pretty good start.
Well, that nightmare scene at the end, I think, was brilliant, and I think they absolutely need that to show you what, you know, and then she wakes up in bed next to some kind of stranger here that we don't know.
What do you mean we don't know him? That's Dean Winters. It's that guy.
And by the way, I'm
it's
saying
not Ryan O'Reilly yet. From Oz. Blatant shout out, by the way, because I think it's an awesome series.
Because I remember my reaction when she first wakes up in bed, and I remember thinking how weird it was. Wait, Sarah Connor's like in a normal house, but she's like in suburbia now. That felt really, really weird to me when the show first aired.
I actually did not watch the entire first season when it was broadcast. My first episode I actually viewed broadcast was Complications. I only did so because of the review I saw on a website. I will say that had I watched Pilot on broadcast, I probably would never have returned to the series, because watching this, it strikes me as a TV version of the movies that doesn't do the action nearly as well. That's trying to do like a Terminator of the Week kind of thing. And I think even though it's well done, if you have a negative impression about what this series is going to be, that it is going to, I don't want to say rip off the movies, but borrow very heavily from it and, you know, maybe do the story a little bit different, but just be a TV version of it, you're not going to think it's going to be very good. And, the pilot, if you just watch that, I think confirms that with a lot of people's expectations. I mean, especially for whether you're someone who comes in thinking, yeah, you know, I don't think they're going to be able to do the action nearly as well, and I really like the movies, and I'm probably not going to get there here, but let's see what they do with the pilot. I give it a chance, and you see that it's not as good as the movie. Or if you're hoping they're going to do something different from the films, if they're going to do a mostly dramatic story, which I think is what the series shifts to, even the next episode. And so we see the opening Terminator's Arcana Chronicles graphic. Which this, I think, it's a shame they got rid of these dates in the series proper after they did this in the pilot, because it really makes it easier to keep the timeline focused, I think, especially in the second season.
It might have helped the writers keep a timeline focused as well.
Yeah.
Put the dates up.
Yeah.
They definitely had a lot of trouble with as the series progressed. Yeah, that was a nice little touch on the pilot. I like that they did that.
Which, by the way, you probably figured out if you're listening that Roxy and I, since we differ so much in our opinion this episode, we're going to fight, so you get to listen to the two of us go at it. And Mr. Domino gets to play referee. You poor bastard.
Mr. Domino's the referee that sits right on the wire trying not to, you know, get hit.
Yeah, see, that this particular scene needs to be expanded, but this is the kind of stuff I'm much more interested in from Terminator as a TV show. And it's actually why, believe it or not, I recognize I may well be a minority of one in the entire universe here, but I actually like the TV series more than any of the movies.
Oh, absolutely. The show as a whole, as a, you know, entity, both seasons and everything, is definitely the best thing, in my opinion, that came out of the entire franchise.
Right, which, by the way, we don't ever want to admit in public to say the marketing guys in Hollywood, because the moment they hear that, like, what, people like a minor TV series better than the movies, find every DVD you can get and burn them.
You know, one of the things that I don't watch many movies these days because of the fact that I just prefer TV so much more, because of the fact that you can get involved in characters and you really get just way into them as time goes on, which was with a movie, it's so compressed that you go in, it's an experience and you're out of it, but with TV, you can follow week to week and you just get more and more involved in these characters and their lives and the story. So I really love TV anyway. So just looking at it from that aspect, I love Terminator 1. I absolutely love Terminator 2. I love this show. But if I had to pick only one thing, I love the show the most. And it's really just because you have the opportunity to just really get so much more involved in the characters.
Speaking of getting involved with characters, God bless Richard T. Jones.
Mr. Ellison, named after Harlan Ellison, which I'm assuming several fans know. But Harlan Ellison actually has his own unique history in science fiction circles. He's known for suing basically at the drop of a hat for anything approaching things that looks like an idea from stories that he wrote in the 50s and 60s. And one of those was Terminator, which he wrote a couple of episodes that of The Outer Limits that share many plot similarities between those episodes and The Paw of the Terminator, to the point where James Cameron and company settled with Harlan Ellison out of court, which in Hollywood that only happens when the person suing actually has a case. So,
yeah, well, those episodes are worth watching for Terminator fans just because, you know, you very much can see the genesis of the ideas there. It's Soldier.
Well, there's that, and there's also,
there's
those two episodes, which if I don't remember the names at the top of my head, but you can find them by any kind of Wikipedia search. There's also the franchise Westworld, which if you want, and where the whole Terminator stalking guys with the red screen came from, watch the end of that movie, because at the end of that movie, spoiler alert, sorry, has a robot stalking a human victim.
Well, and it even has the it even has the thing that Cameron used again in Terminator with the, you know, okay, we think he's dead, but then he's back, you know.
Yep. So you have this whole summary of what's going on prior to the series, which, I mean, Josh Friedman says in the commentary that you have to explain things for new viewers. There's going to be people who have never heard of Terminator before, sure. A little bit of sarcasm there.
It's the as-you-know Bob scene.
Yeah, but I think also you need to do this to allow a show to stand on its own. You have to make a story as self-contained as possible when you're doing TV here. And if you just try and you know, say, like, well, this only works if you watch T1 and T2, then it doesn't work as its own story. And now we have the scary Terminator show up because Sarah's back in the computer. Which, if you notice, I guess she's wearing some kind of ENT shirt or something, because you can see an American flag on the corner of her. And 7 days later, we're in New Mexico.
Everybody's first dose of Glaubot.
Mm-hmm. Which, for the record, for listeners, if you're wondering where that term comes from, I lay full claim to it. I invented it. It's my name for Summer Glau fans. And I'm very proud of that name. I think it fits, given the series that we're watching at the moment. And, you know, this is Cameron's first scene, which... I am not a Glaubot. I want to make it very clear. I don't watch most of the stuff that Ms. Glau was in. Cameron is my favorite character in the series, because she is such a morally gray character. You really don't quite know what side of the line she's on. You know, is she really a good guy or not? And it's because of what she is, what she does, and you know, and the way she behaves. Like, is she really doing things because she actually cares for John and wants the good guys to win? Or, you know, and it's one of the strongest elements of the series is her, and I say her deliberately instead of it, is her growth as a mind. She's very childlike, and she's learning about her world. Something that only, I think, really truly begins in the second season in Samson and Delilah. And we have these quiet mother-son moments, which, I mean, if there's one thing I wish there had been a little more in the second season is more of this, or at least, you know, it's one of the big differences between season one and season two, I think, is that you have more of these mother-son moments, and then John kind of withdraws from everyone in the beginning of the second season. There are good reasons for that, and it's more like because I like these scenes so much.
Well, and I think part of that, too, is because season one is much more about Sarah, and John is mostly defined by his relationship with Sarah. Whereas in season two, it's much more about, aside from one particular arc, it's much more about John coming into his own and starting down the path towards becoming General Connor.
That's why I like these scenes so much, because I think part of the way you can show that is showing him actually winning an argument, quote-unquote, with Sarah a few times, which he does kind of toward the end. I just would like to see more of that. Because as much as I like Cameron, the character that I actually empathize with the most is John. And the reason for this is, one, I think Decker gives an excellent performance. If I were to name the three best actors in the series, I would say Lena Headey, Thomas Decker, and Garrett Dillahunt in that order. Thomas, I think, is excellent in not so much the first episode, that we'll get to it later when the scene comes up, but I think starting from the second episode on, I think he plays the transformation of John trying to be a more heroic guy and having a teenager's idea of what kind of man he's supposed to be. And then as he's kind of growing up and realizing that I'm not supposed to be a hero, I'm supposed to be a general. Those are two completely different things. I mean, generals play to win a war, but by doing so, they order men to their deaths. That's not a great thing.
Well, not like, okay, you, and you, go. You're dead.
Not like that. It's like
the goal is to put together a plan that hopefully people won't die, but you know the difference.
Right, but it's like you, and you die, the three of you die, so that 30 or 300 people live. That's how you have to justify it. And I'm paraphrasing a line from Saving Private Ryan, which is one of the things that Tom Hanks' character says. Oops, and I missed commenting on one of Cameron's lines. Thank you for explaining. Which gets repeated so much in fandom. And now we have Owain Yeoman entering, who was the second choice to play Cromartie. The first choice was actually Garrett Dillahunt, but apparently something went wrong with the audition.
Really, Garrett Dillahunt was originally supposed to have the role?
Yeah, but apparently there was something weird. It was on the commentary. Something weird went wrong with his audition, which I don't want to spoil the commentary for fans, so I suggest you listen to it. Here we actually come to another scene, which is like, why is this happening? Okay, I mean, if the school has metal detectors, which you wouldn't in 1999 New Mexico, it would detect Cromartie going off. I mean, why do you hide a gun in your leg? It doesn't make sense. And actually, I would like it better if you don't see him reaching into his leg. Okay, he's clearly Terminator, clearly Terminator, clearly Terminator. And you don't need this special effect. Just have him pick up the gun. And I think it would be much more shocking.
Yeah.
I do like the nice bit with Cameron there, pretending to be dead. Although, again, it's a little kind of logical. The guy still has a gun. Why are you faking death? But, you know, again, you have to save the suspense. And you're, again, you're a Terminator. Why would you want to reveal that you're a robot to everybody? And, you know, I think it was one of those things that was done because it's a Terminator, it looks cool. And if that's the only reason you can use to justify something, that really is a reason that you should therefore not do it. You want to really avoid it.
Now, of course, it could be argued, as far as the gun and the leg thing, that, you know, he walks through a metal detector and he's going to go off either way. And so he can disguise the gun as just being part of that. It's still pretty contrived, but...
Yeah. And also the crossover thing. Why?
Okay. Why? He assumes he goes through a metal detector and he sets it off because he's so much metal, but there wouldn't be any... They wouldn't be able to find anything on him, you know.
Here's another thing...
He can empty all his pockets.
Here's another thing that's contrived. The editing there is out of sequence. There's no way a news report, especially in 1999, would get there that fast so that we would see this at the same time. I mean, we would know maybe an hour later. Okay. I mean, again, you can probably save, you know, several thousand dollars more with this action scene if you don't have it. And there's a school bus right tied up again. So continuity. Yes, I do notice these things. And, you know, here, it's obvious this guy's a Terminator at this point. You're showing a Terminator vision. You don't need the robot leg. So just all these things you can just, in the first 20 minutes, you can just pull out and save money. And now we have the reveal that Miss Glau...
Yeah, the robot leg thing that plays into Allison's journey into beginning to believe the whole thing. That's, like, the first thing that he hears, that the witnesses saw a guy with some kind of robot leg. Although I never understood why anybody would call it a robot leg. They would have called it an artificial leg, I think.
Here's the solution to fix it. You just saw the guy get hit by a truck, and he gets up, but he still has a damaged face. And he's like a guy with, you know, metal scars on his face. You know, just have somebody see Cromarty at that point. See how he's damaged in his face? Just have that come out. You know, as a witness to say, see a guy with a metal scarred face. I do love this bit with how she's willing to shoot herself. I have to say, I don't like the way Owain Yeoman plays Cromarty. I really don't. I think his voice isn't quite flat enough. He's too emotional, kind of. I mean, his movements are fine, but...
No, I thought he was fine as a Terminator.
Eh.
I don't know if he had been, like, playing the part for the whole series. I don't know, you know, if I would have liked him the whole time, but I thought he did fine.
I mean, part of it's because I like the way Garrett Dillahunt played Cromarty so much better than Yeoman.
Well, Owain Yeoman here is a little bit like Leonard Nimoy in the second Star Trek pilot. You know, it's everybody around him says, oh, you're an cold, emotionless Terminator, but really he's showing... plenty, you know.
Well, the whole class is misaligned.
Yeah.
Now, believe it or not, we're actually coming to an action sequence that I don't have a problem with. You know, which is the Terminator fight, which they're always good. They're always very good. I love seeing these things. You know, not to make fans scream, but I don't think Terminator 3 is an awful movie, and I don't think Terminator 3... I actually think Terminator 3 is the best Terminator on Terminator fight of the entire series.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's the thing, is it's a cartoon, but it's an entertaining cartoon.
Yeah. And let's leave it at that before people can get back on the show, before people start
right.
screaming. Because I said something that should be forbidden.
I love this fight.
Yeah, those collapsible walls, by the way, are like made of styrofoam. Or what? One of the things they'll do is they'll have this like spray paint stuff that they'll spray on walls to make it look rougher than it really is. It's called spray foam, which I'm not quite sure if they used it here. Only people who built the set would know that. But it's actually something that was invented in Star Trek, where you have this mix of chemicals that you mix together, and then you spray it on the surface, you get something that looks very rough. Yeah, which, by the way, I would like to point out here that if this Terminator is hitting Cameron as hard as he's supposed to, you would see flesh peeling off. You can't really do that so much because, well, it's a TV show. So, oh God, I actually found a problem with an action scene I like. And now we have something that's with the Terminator lore that's unique to the show, the Terminator getting shorted out. We don't see this in any of the prior movies.
No, but it's definitely something that makes sense. And
yeah, it does make sense.
It's a machine. A machine is something that does a task no matter what it's supposed to do. And Terminators are not machines. They're sentient. The moment you become sentient, you're no longer just a machine. But they're robotic life form and electrically powered, so you know it makes sense that you could overload them.
I really, really hate that Sarah cuts off Cameron when she tries to tell her stuff.
Well,
not now. Yeah, it's like, can you just let it off?
Right, because he's trying to get away.
Can we just hear some information about why you're here?
Yeah, which you're coming to that right now. And I think the point of that is, it's just the two of them talking because they're going to be the two people responsible for taking care of John.
Fan service.
Yeah, obviously. A lot about fan service. I lost my train of thought. Thank you, Mr. Domino. this is the part info dump with what's going on now in the future war, what's different. Which is already passed. We're safe.
That was another thing I really liked about as the show progressed was how the date for J-Day kept changing. You know, it's the idea that, well, we may not be able to completely get rid of it, but we can at least continue to forestall it.
That's the other thing I liked about the series is that it introduces the idea that there's something trying to build Skynet. We don't quite know what it is, and it's implied that this is Skynet trying to build itself.
There was a series of Terminator novels by S.M. Sterling that was a trilogy that I feel like TSCC borrowed pretty heavily from. But they had a concept in there that I really liked, that J-Day was always going to happen because there were certain points in time that were just fixed. And that you could forestall them, you could do everything, but time itself would basically bend and warp itself back to put events where they needed to be in order for certain things to happen, and J-Day was one of them.
Well, I don't quite agree with that because the future is not set. I don't agree with that 100%. I think I think once the bombs drop, then certain events are set. Skynet has to try and kill Sarah Connor. Because that is the genesis of Skynet, the first Terminator from the original movie being sent back in time. John also needs to create himself, so he needs to send back Kyle Reese to protect his mother. I mean, those things are fixed. He also needs to protect himself in the past at different time points. So he needs to send back people that he knows and trusts.
You're talking about past points that are important once you're beyond those. So, but in terms of what's going to happen in the future.
Well, I mean, how that happens.
Everything in the past can be altered. You know, like, once you do backward time travel, any little thing that's different, the future can turn out different, so.
Right. Now, I will add this, though. The future is not set. That's not from Terminator 1. That was something introduced in Terminator 2.
Right.
The original monologue is just the future is not set. There is no fate for what we make for ourselves. It's in Terminator 2 only. Kyle Reese never says that in Terminator 1. Watch the movie.
Right. If I remember correctly, he said it in the deleted hospital scene.
And for Terminator 1?
No, in T2.
Right, T2. That's where they insert it. But that's one of the changes James Cameron made for the second movie. Because if you watch the first one, it's really no place he's supposed to go with it. It's a self-contained story. He kind of broke his own carrot. Now, this actually is the one scene with Thomas Decker that I think he comes off as a little too whiny here. I mean, I like the idea that he's scared. I think he's playing that part well, but he's just a little too, I think it would have been better if this were, shock, why is this happening again? I thought we stopped it. You know, what kind of man am I going to have to be now? And I think I would have preferred it if it had been she's seeing how frightened he is, and I think she also shares the same fear of what kind of man he has to become because of this. And I think you wind up in the same location. She wants to prevent Judgment Day so John can have his own life.
Yeah, and that's always an interesting concept, you know. I mean, she's got this quest to save billions and billions and billions of lives, but okay, billions and billions, fine. I want my son to grow up, you know, to be a senator, depending on which ending to T2 you watched.
No, I don't count that ending you're talking about, the senator ending. I hated that alternate ending. That was the worst. It was like the Disney ending.
Which, yeah.
That was Disney, way Disney. Too cheery.
Yeah, I also for listeners, I hate Disney endings and fairy tale endings. And now we have the first bit with Sarah going, John and something that looks like a very cute girl. I know.
Yeah, I think that look when she comes out of the store is like, I don't know about this.
Yeah, which.
This could
you know, be. Yeah, this is going to. I think any even semi-responsible parent would be very, very worried that their child is attracted to a killer robot, which is what Cameron is. You can't forget that. That's what she's always going to be. And that's not. Cameron doesn't actually look like Summer Glau when you think about it. What Cameron's face really is what's beneath the skin. Okay. This actually also, this chip scene, I think need to be reshot because Cameron is a little too human with her smiles and mannerisms in this entire pilot. And I think this is one of the, again, one of the reasons why the pilot is a weaker episode. It's something that was filmed in May, and they obviously changed their minds with how human they wanted Cameron to behave in the rest of the first season. And we have the Dyson Resonance, which, again, is a callback to Terminator 2, which this is a logical place to go. Yes, I understand the reasons for it. Here's the problem with it. Again, you're following the movies, which for people who are thinking the worst of following the movies, this is confirming it by going to the Dysons. And it winds up being kind of a dead end, too. Because
yeah, but introducing like the fact that Teresa Dyson is still part of the story, because then she comes back, you know, two episodes later, she's back
true.
In it again.
That's true. She's yes. So it's kind of like a catch-22 here. You need to connect. You need to show that there's a dead end here with the Dysons, that they're not responsible for building it, even though this probably changed with the end of the second season with what happened with Danny. But it is part of the story. I think it would have been better if they tried to, like, this was the one definite T2 reference that they put in and just minimized absolutely everything else. Like, no shootout scene in the beginning. Everything they could just try and avoid looking like the movies. And that I think is my problem with the first, my big problem with a lot of the early action scenes. Which, I mean, even later, yes, you introduce Teresa, and then you have Cromarty show up again at the house, just like the T-1000 showed up at Dyson's residence in Terminator 2, which apparently this was the same – I'm not sure if this is the same set that they used in the Terminator 2. There was a mention of it. The exterior house. The interior is obviously different. But I think this was mentioned in the commentary as being the same home used for exterior sequences in the movie.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
Why
do you think I'd never listened to the commentary? It's just been a really long time. I think I did the commentary like when I first got the DVDs. I don't remember any of it.
Yeah, but here's another action sequence that, you know, it's a...
Yeah, this one I don't have too much problem with because, again, you've got to show some of this, although
yeah.
The having him run after it Robert Patrick style is a little too much of a winking nod. But
right, and then you have this big, giant explosion with the stuntman getting through the air. Again, why does that need to happen? They're in a car. They're driving. I mean, it's not like a Terminator is going to run fast enough to catch up.
Well, actually, that was the problem they had in T2, was Robert Patrick kept catching the car.
That's right.
Yeah, that's – I assume you're talking about the escape from Pescadero scene.
Right.
That's easy enough to explain.
Yeah, but in the explosion here, it's not like Cameron rigged the truck knowing that they would be at the Dyson residence and then Cromarty would show up and then they would be driving away and he'd run past the truck. She just rigged it in the event that they needed to blow him up somehow if he got there.
Yeah, I
guess it's just a safety precaution. And then conveniently he ran past the truck, so she detonated it.
Yeah, it's too convoluted an explanation for me. I think
if she had, but what I'm saying is, she had planned for that to work out exactly as it did. Then you could say, oh, come on, that's dumb. But
no,
put some explosives in there just in case they needed them for some reason.
But why didn't you have an explosion in the first place? You don't need that as part of the scene. And in fact, I actually think it works better if Cromartie's not damaged at all, because you know, you still have this dangerous, fully functional robot on them.
Yeah, but then when you get to the bank, he won't look all freaky, and the cops won't pause for a minute to be like, "What's with this freaky guy that looks like a partial robot?"
I think he looks kind of freaky just from when he captures Sarah. I mean, you can actually see the damage he's repaired in a scene prior to that explosion, where you know he's got his leg all bandaged. His face still scarred up. A
couple marks on his face, that's nothing.
Then hit him with the truck again, okay? You don't need the explosion.
But the explosion doesn't hurt. It's good.
I'm talking about this from a budgetary perspective. Ways you could save money so you don't need to put this on a broadcast network.
Yeah, well, which they could have implemented a thing from the novelization of the first movie where they had Arnold, basically his skin was a separate, it was actually living skin and stuff, they said in the book. And after he got hit the first few times, you know, it went over several days, and his skin was rotting and, you know, necrotizing and stuff, which was part of why he donned the shades and all that kind of stuff. So they could have just had him starting to peel away and rot as the skin died.
I haven't read the books, so.
Wait, yeah. How would that help with budgetary things? Because that would just be more appliances they'd have to put on them, because the skin was like rotting, peeling away.
Right, but they wouldn't have had to blow it up.
By the way, that's a blatant computer effect there with this bank and then the skyline behind. Having been to Los Angeles, the environment around downtown doesn't look like that, but the nice skyline behind, it doesn't.
But maybe it did in 1999.
Yeah,
no. Which, again, I mean, it's, you know, you have to spend the money for this big budget thing. And I mean, this show, if it had been on a cable network, if it had been on the Sci-Fi Channel, say, which is highly unlikely because Sci-Fi Channel is owned by Universal, and this show is being produced by Warner Brothers. So the only shows that Sci-Fi puts on are shows from either Universal Studios, from Lionsgate, or shows that are co-productions with Canada.
And also, sci-fi shows really low budget.
Well, no, actually.
Stargate looked anywhere near as good if it was.
Well, actually, a lot of the Stargate and Battlestar Galactica were filmed for about $2 to $3 million an episode.
Yeah, Battlestar Galactica looked really good.
They were filmed in Canada, so what that let them do was save about 25-30% on the budget. If they filmed the same sci-fi shows in Los Angeles, it would be $3 to $4 million an episode instead. Which Sci-Fi can't afford. It's also the reason why any original Sci-Fi series is going to end after 5 seasons, no matter how popular it is, no matter what the ratings are, because they, at that point, the cast and cost of production is so great that they can't really make their money back, even by syndication and ratings. So that's why Eureka is being ended after 5 seasons. The same is probably going to happen to Warehouse 13. It's going to be ended after the 5th or 6th season. They get to, you know, 80 or 90 episodes of syndication, and that's it. Which I do like this bit, you know, where they build future tech, which it, as a guy who likes Back to the Future, that's what that's straight out of, you know, which, you know, you use that, you know how to build something in the future, so you're, excuse me, so you come back and build the equivalent in the past, and, yeah, the FBI doesn't work this fast. Okay. I want to make it very clear.
But Richard T. Jones works this fast. He's a smooth operator, that one. Yeah, I swear, he was probably one of the main reasons I kept with this show through the early episodes, because it was impressive, but it didn't blow me away until I got to the second season. But
really, Ellison was your favorite character?
Jesus Christ, I loved him.
Really?
Honestly, yeah, not nearly as much in the second season. I mean, his arc is still fascinating, but I liked everybody else so much more in the second season.
I mean, again, you can have like a cut up face bit with Cromarty from the truck accident. And the one thing I think this pilot episode does that was very smart was the jump into the future. And it's done for budgetary reasons. It's done because it's actually, you have to spend a lot of time, effort, and money to round up a bunch of things that are, you know, 7 to 8 years old that they're out of date. And which means you'd have to have somebody dedicated just buying, okay, a 1998 Camaro or a, you know, whatever. Which, yeah, okay, you can find the bargain basement, but that still means somebody you have to employ full time just to make sure the set design is accurate. And
oh, yeah,
it's
definitely
so much
simplicity for having the show set in present day. And I thought it was very clever the way they did it. I didn't expect it. Like, when that pilot was airing, I did not expect that they were going to jump into the future. So
yeah,
I thought it was very cool.
This is where the pilot goes from being, okay, it's just like the movies, to, wait, they're doing something different.
Yeah.
It's not until the very end. You know, we're up until now, we've been seeing, okay, this is like, you know, TV version of the movies. Not seeing anything that's really impressive, and, this is kind of different.
I don't know. Sarah never had that big a gun in the movies.
I love that gun. I'm going to get me that.
Which actually looks like it's a jerry-rigged version of a kind of a grenade launcher that you can buy.
Yeah, I look at it, I see a lot of parts that I recognize on there. So
yeah, it's like a 6-round grenade launcher. I know too way too much about military stuff. I can't name the kind of a grenade launcher it is. I know where to find out what it is.
God, I love the music in the scene. The pounding of Cromarty, like ripping the vault door apart, combined with that sort of.
Well, it's Bear McCreary. Is one of the
sad music.
Yeah, I'm sure on one of these very quickly, I'll have a long diatribe on why Bear McCreary is the savior of modern TV scoring and all that kind of stuff. He's another one of the people involved in this show that I am thoroughly in love with. Oh God, I hate this effect coming up. Hate this shot so much.
What, the time bubble?
No, the where she shoots him and then the head and everything.
Oh. Yeah, everybody hates that.
So bad.
Which, by the way, I gotta say, I really think this is, I like the second season better than the first.
Oh, absolutely.
No.
I know a lot of, it's Roxy's one of the people who disagrees. Again, we're fighting, yay! It's entertaining. And you can actually see the role in skin suits, actually, in that previous shot.
Yeah.
Stunt doubles in skin suits, no less. Anyway. Yep. Oh, actually, high def TV. One of the things that I think is very silly with the first season is how they recreate Cromarty. I think that part of this is I'm a research scientist, which means that when it comes to things like, you know, biology, I kind of know what I'm talking about. I have a PhD in it. that's a nice bit with a kid, by the way. The reason why you're not seeing everything like a sharp image and through windows and whatnot is because you would see that these are actors wearing body suits otherwise in those long shots.
That was the other thing I really liked about the time jump was how they conveniently sidestepped the T3 question of Sarah's cancer.
Yeah. You know, that's one of those things that's done for the same reason that Hicks was killed off in Alien 3 to start with, because they didn't want to pay the money for the actor.
Right.
And in this case, Linda Hamilton said that, you know, now I'm not going to appear if I'm going to wind up getting killed off in the first third, which is the original script plan. And again, here's, okay, straight out of the first three movies, you know, the Terminator rips off people's clothes. Which they put that in just to show Summer Glau, a.k.a. River Tam, kicking the crap out of somebody who's bigger than her. Which I have no doubt she could do in real life because you have to kind of, you know, be trained for that thing to be an actor. So if I ever do meet her face to face, I am going to make it a point not to make her angry, because I wouldn't like her when she's angry. Brownie points for anybody who knows what series that's from.
Mr.
Not Batman. For you guys, not for you. Thanks for giving the clue away, Mr. Domino. And now we have the, and where things are looking a little different. There is one, you know, we have Sarah's monologues here, which I think the way Lena plays Sarah on screen is brilliant. I think she's the best of the show, but her monologues in the pilot, I think they're very flat. I don't think they're very well done. I think she improves as the
well.
As
they
the
were trying a little too hard to emulate the style of the closing monologue from T2.
Yeah, that's what I thought too. I think they come across a little flat in the pilot.
Yeah, I do like this nice bit with Charles.
I like that very nice. I really missed the monologues when they got rid of them. So I loved them all through the first season.
Well, they got rid of them because of how flat they are to open the first season. And I mean, people, the Fox did, every broadcast network, every network period does audience research for people who watch the show, and they ask people who aren't diehard fans, okay, what do you not like about it? How can we fix it? And I guarantee you, one of the things that came up was the Sarah monologues. They're very flat. I mean, I love the Bird Notice monologues done by the main character, Michael Weston, and I have talked to people who tell me that they like what goes on in the show, but they never want to listen to any of it because they can't say Michael Weston's monologues. I think they're awesome.
Yeah, some people like monologues, some don't. For Sarah Connor Chronicles, I thought the monologues worked really well. Even when a particular monologue wasn't all that great, I still thought overall they gave a really good voice to the show and a nice consistency from episode to episode. I liked it.
Yeah, I think the dialogue is very good, but the delivery to start off with wasn't good. And, you know, again, she got stronger, but I think it was, you know, too little too late for people to really like it. And now we're at the end of the episode, and...
Yep, that's all of it. And hopefully we'll be back in about 2 weeks with the commentary for Nathi Sotan. Until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and peace, love, and no fate.